Continuous improvement comes in lots of different flavors and styles. I'm Bella Engelbach, and I'm inviting you to journey with me to the edges of lean. Episode 122, The Stories We Tell with Aurora Winter. We've been looking at different aspects of communication here at the Edges of Lean, and one aspect I wanted to explore more was the neuroscience of communication. Creative entrepreneur, writer, and coach Aurora Winter joins me to bring insight on that topic and to highlight the power of stories. Aurora's book is Turn Words into Wealth. Aurora Winter, welcome to the Edges of Lean.
Bella, it's so great to be on the show with you today.
Thank you for coming. Aurora, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do today, and some of your path to doing what you do today?
Well, I've had a very interesting path. I have an MBA. My background's in economics, but I'm somebody who's been continually pushing myself to reinvent myself, to discover where the edges are. So I've had several businesses, which grew to seven figures, including yacht sales, film and television, coach training. And now I primarily help people with their message. I love to leverage what I know about the neuroscience of communication and what I've learned in film and television to help people create compelling messages that resonate with their audience. So I'm the author of Turn Words into Wealth, for example, and I also write fantasy book, Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse is my new fantasy series. So I'm happy to be a contribution today, however you'd like to take this conversation. I've really enjoyed learning and challenging myself, you know, to embrace storytelling. And I think storytelling is the most overlooked resource or skill or tool that you could have in your toolkit to dramatically increase the productivity of your team and your profitability. So let's dive into that and not ignore the words that you speak as a very valuable tool to leverage.
This is such an important topic, I think, for everybody, right? And for people who are working to improve organizations, to make organizations better in some way. There are so many opportunities to speak, to share a message. And I know it's, you know, it's hard. And one of the things that I know that's hard for us is we get very excited about the tools and we get excited about results we've seen in other places. And we are not always clear about how we, you know, what our message is. And one of the things I hear a lot from people who are doing this kind of work is, well, I'm not very good at the marketing side of it, right? The telling my own story side of it. And I think that's true for a lot of people. Why do you think that we sort of end up in the business world but and not able to tell our own story?
Well, I think it's paradoxical. The more educated we are, the worse we are at telling our story, because going through university training basically trains us to focus on the Excel spreadsheet part of the communication. Mm. And what I'd love people to know, there's three steps to communicating anything to anyone, anytime. And the first step is not the Excel spreadsheet. So whenever you find the Excel spreadsheet or the details coming out of your mouth first, rewind, and instead do this. So there's three steps. The first step to communication is to catch the attention of the person. This is done really through the ancient reptilian brain or the croc brain. So it's very expensive for a person to process and digest detailed information. And so human beings evolved over time to go, hey, let's not process every bit of information that comes across our path because it uses so many calories and so much fat. It's very expensive. So before you have permission, really, to talk about whatever you want to talk about, you need to address the croc brain, the ancient reptilian brain, get permission, get interest. So you might think of this as the summary of what it's about, but in a catchy way. So for example, Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, that's an example of appealing to the croc brain, or Brené Brown's paradoxical, The Power of Vulnerability, or Steve Jobs' 1,000 Songs in Your Pocket. All of these things are getting the attention of the croc brain, which gives permission to go further. So whenever you start a presentation, whether you're talking to your team, one employee, or 1,000 people, how can you catch the attention of what you're about? So for example, even the title of a book, Turn Words into Wealth, that's telling us what is the category that we're talking, what is the promise behind what we're getting into? Well, the promise is we're going to help you turn your words into wealth. And even the subtitle is like going a little bit detail, a little tiny bit more detail, again for the croc brain, blueprint for your business, brand, and book. Okay. So once you've addressed the croc brain with something short and snappy, the next step is to address the midbrain. But I want to give you, if you want to comment on the croc brain.
So
Sure.
that's something that I'm personally very interested in, and because when we're dealing with innovation, one of the things that we know about innovation is that our normal human reaction when we see something new is to just figure out, is this thing dangerous? Does it remind me of something dangerous, or does it subconsciously remind me of something dangerous and I need to protect myself? And once I need to protect myself from that new thing, then I'm going to run away, I'm going to argue, I'm going to come up with excuses not to listen to you. So those things that you talked about that are enticing, that will kind of make you go, oh, that's interesting. It's worth my time and my energy to not run away, to not try to bite this thing, this new thing that's just popped in front of me. That enticement, wouldn't that be different for different people, Aurora?
Well, you're right, Bella. It will be different for different people. So you have to know who your target audience is. Like today, we're aware we're talking to people who are probably managers or leaders or innovators or consultants who are about lean. So we're focusing our content towards that. You won't have, there's no such thing as one message that will fit everybody. From a tribesperson in Nigeria to somebody working in the White House. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So you want to have more than one message in your toolkit that you've already thought of and that's handy and that's accessible so that you can try on and float by different messages for different people. And you're right, like it's important. You can be a little bit dangerous because then the croc brain or reptilian brain is alert. But if you're overwhelmingly dangerous, then the person will just run away and shut down. You can be a little bit sexy, like the croc brain is ancient, so it wants to eat or mate or have something good or be alert to danger, but you don't want to be boring. So you don't want to say, oh, well, I've already heard this. And then the person also shuts down. Anyway, the croc brain part of the message should be quite short and quite snappy. So, for example, multiple streams of income and influence. That's another short, snappy. What are we talking about? What is the value proposition here? And hopefully, people go, oh, I'd like to learn a little bit more about multiple streams of income or about multiple streams of influence. Okay. And if they're not interested in that and that's what you're all about, well, then fine. Let them go. Talk to somebody who is interested in what you have to share. You want to share some more about that, or shall I go on to the second step?
No, go on. Let's help. So we're dealing with our reptilian brains. We all have them, right?
Yeah.
So now you want to get people to start to think a little bit, right?
Exactly right. So the second step in the neuroscience of communication is to address the midbrain. This is not as ancient as the croc brain that we're calling, but it is a very important part of humanity. The reason that human beings survived, we're not that fast, our teeth are not that sharp, our claws are not that sharp, is because we gathered in tribes and dozens of people or up to 150 people in tribes or towns or communities. That made humans very strong. But the flip side of that is that being outcast was basically a death sentence. So people are really hardwired to pay attention to what do other people think. It's not just about social media. It's really deeply ingrained in our history and our survival of human beings. We depend on other people. So the second step in communication takes a lot more words to explain it than to do it. And I'll do it in the end, is to address the social brain. So that is like other people think this is a good idea. other people are interested in this. You should be too. So for example, I could say, you know, this book, Turn Words Into Wealth, won the Outstanding Nonfiction Book of the Year Award in the publishing category. I could say this book, Magic Mystery in the Multiverse, won the Reader's Choice Award in 2023 Best Book for Teens. I could let you know that Dr. Wayne Dyer endorsed my first book. Any of these things are appealing to the social brain, and they're reassuring that part that doesn't want to be outcast. Being on this podcast with you, Bella, appeals to the social brain because it's like, oh, Bella thinks Aurora is worth talking to, and Aurora thinks Bella is worth talking to. And so there's already the social approval thumbs up happening there. So that is the second step. See if you can work in a little bit about why this process that you're suggesting, why the mission that you have in mind is important to other people. So, you know, Bill Gates, a computer on every desk and in every home. So then he could back that up with, you know, why other people are keen on that and what a difference it will make. So that's the second step, is just quickly work in your midbrain and connect with why, what you're talking about, what your speech is about, what you're inviting people to get behind is something good for the group. Does that make sense, Bella?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I'm thinking that that is also something when I'm thinking about, you know, how we talk about some of sometimes the work that we do, that we don't necessarily, I mean, bring that into the conversation, because we go immediately to the, as you said, sort of the Excel. I'm saying we generally, because I know a lot of you listening are smarter than this, right? But, you know, we go to the Excel spreadsheet. Well, look at the results, right? Look at the things that could happen, right? But you know, this is about people, and we want to be about people. We want people to be happy and successful and growing and developing in these organizations that we're working with. Then it's such a great opportunity then to talk about that and
exactly
to bring...
Right.
Bring and that into the picture.
Exactly right. And as Simon Sinek says, you know, start with why. If you can get the other people on your team really engaged, fully buying into the vision, they will carry that ball forward in a much more effective way than if they're just following orders. Mm-hmm. So then the third step is to do what we normally want to do first, or at least those of us that like lean manufacturing and that have got MBAs like to do first, or tend to do first, which is that Excel spreadsheet. And another way to think about this so that you can remember is, like, if you email somebody an Excel spreadsheet, they have to decide to open it, right? Are they going to open it? So what is the subject line in your email, and who is it from? So the subject line in the email is like appealing to the croc brain, why they should open. Who it is from is about trust. If they don't know who it's from, they're not going to open it. So again, even opening an email can remind you of these steps. So the subject line is like why that doesn't go in spam, or why they should even look at it at all. And the trust is why they'll open it. The Excel spreadsheet part, okay, now you can get into whatever you're jazzed about, but be cautious. The brain can only pay attention for 20 minutes. It can really not pay attention for the hour or 90 minutes that many meetings are. So construct your main message, usually in no more than three parts, and have each one of those parts take no more than 5 minutes. And with each of those parts, again, do those three steps. So you basically have 3 points, each one has the three steps. And then people will at least remember one of these things. If you just give information, it's very hard for the person to carry the ball forward and get other people one step removed engaged, because they don't have a story or something snappy to pin it on. So help others help you by taking advantage of the neuroscience. And I want to let you say something here, but I'm super stoked to share a little bit more about why this matters so much and the huge 27x value that it can potentially create.
Well, can we just talk for a minute about stories? I saw a really cute video this morning. I think it was, I don't know if it was on Instagram or where it was, little kid, maybe 18 months old, sitting on a little tiny couch. With holding its doll, I think it's a little girl, so holding her doll, and she had a book, which obviously she can't read, but she's memorized the words in the book. And she's reading the book to the doll. And when she gets to the end of the book, she says, for the doll, she's speaking for the doll, oh, read it again. Which is what I'm sure she says to her parents. She does that over and over again. So, I mean, we just know that principle of a story, something with a beginning, a middle, an end, a plot, a denouement is so appealing to our brains. And yet it's so easy for us to forget that or forget how to tell stories.
It is easy for us to forget, but it's also easy for us to remember a beginning, a middle, and an end. I think stories, let's back up and say, information is great, science is great, but you cannot decide how to live your life just with information. It needs to be filtered through what do you value, right? Information alone does not give you the recipe for how to live your life or how to run your business or whether to fire that person or give them more training. Values do. Once you have set the values, then the information can support and you can, make your chart and make your decision. So stories are how humanity understands values. Stories teach values and science provides information. So, values plus information is the recipe to making clear decisions that are congruent with your vision, your mission, your purpose. So, while we all love science and we mostly remember how important numbers are and the bottom line is, we often forget that everything actually needs to be driven by values. And that I think humanity has attempted to convey or carry forward values from generation to generation, not through DNA, but from stories. Stories are like humanity's genetic code for carrying forward how to live a good life. And so I love stories, and I think that we can easily underestimate the value and the importance of stories. So, with this framework of understanding that stories are attempting to convey value, how can you add a story about the value of whatever you're up to in your organization or in this particular talk? I just want to add this extra thing because sometimes people go like, "Yeah, stories. I'd rather have just a checklist of 10 things to do." But here, let me challenge the listeners. How many of you can remember the 10 commandments? Or how many of you can remember how many commandments? I'll give you a second to think about this because I bet you will not remember 10. I bet you will be shocked that you can maybe remember 3 or 4. Think about that for a second. Now, how many stories can you remember from the Bible? I bet if you do this exercise, and I'll give Bella a chance to weigh in here, you will notice that actually you have a vague recollection of the Ten Commandments, which are like a checklist and very condensed, but there's no story to hold them to your memory. Whereas I bet you can remember more stories from the Bible than the 10 straightforward commandments. What about you, Bella? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I would say definitely. I mean, there's a, I mean, even if you think about, stories, if I think about the Ten Commandments, I also think about, all the stories that surround the Ten Commandments, right? And how people, what the belief was, but how they came about, and how people treat them today, and what the political ramifications are of them. I mean, there's all this stuff, other stuff. The commandments themselves, actually, I agree. Most people probably couldn't list them all out.
So and the other thing I think, like sometimes we can quibble with myths or with fairy tales or with stories from the Bible for that matter, but my passionate belief is if we have this filter that stories are not intended as a scientific account of what happened, but stories are intended to point towards how to live a good life, we will love stories even more and be able to see how incorporating stories can add value. So to bring this forward to how to continually improve in your organization, I challenge the listeners, continually improve your communication and see how you could add some stories to every day, communicating the direction of the value of what you're about, because people really want to be aligned with something that's more important to themselves. They are hungry for meaning, and stories provide meaning and can give people a great reason to say, Monday morning is the best morning of the week because I'm so excited to contribute to something that's bigger than just, paying the rent.
Right, because it contributes to belonging, and that's what we really want. We want to belong.
We want
We
to belong.
want,
Midbrain again.
yeah, exactly, yeah. So, and I think that's really for me. I have this little place where, as you're trained as a scientist, that I know that with stories we can sometimes. And this is one of the reasons that scientists look at people who are not scientists and say, ah, they just don't know what's going on. We can sometimes take one story, which is not equivalent to data, right? It's not equivalent to data from a lot of people, and take that one story and apply it to everything, right? So for me, with my background in science, I always want to know, well, is that story representative of the data, or is that actually an outlier? Right. So that would be, that story would need, for me, would need to be very much aligned with that value, that it is representative of
I
what's
have
really
that
happening.
same. I have that same thing come up with. Yeah, right. Is that representative? Absolutely right. Because you have a value around integrity and around the truth, and I have that as
And
well.
I hesitate to use the word
Story
truth
doesn't.
because that's such a tough word today. But
Yeah, well, story doesn't have to be fable. The other neuroscience hack to know is that you can start a presentation with a question or with half of a story. And then you actually create a lot of interest because people want to know how the story ends. And so by leaving that tension there while you add layers to whatever you want to convey is very smart, especially if the story involves you. So for example, you could tell a story about getting on a plane. It's a small private plane. You're off to some meeting, and the pilot reports one of the two engines conks out. Yikes!
Yikes.
And then you just leave that story and you go on to say something else. The audience is going to be paying attention. They want to know how that story ends. So you can milk or use that attention in that way. And then, after the end, you'll tell them, obviously, you survived. They know you survived. You're talking at the front
Right,
of the room,
right,
but
right, right.
you finished the story. But you can do that with any story. So that is another thing to know about neuroscience, is that you want that an open loop or an unanswered question makes for a page turner, but it also makes for an interested audience when you're speaking. As scientists or as academics, we often close the loops too quickly because we want to get to the end. But getting to the end is not the point. You need people to be listening. If they're not listening, your whole presentation is no point. So challenge yourself to feel comfortable leaving some open questions unanswered for a minute or two. And just notice that people will be leaning forward, eager to find out what is the answer. Even you can start the question, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as an engine conked out and is the plane going to crash. It could be just a question. Here, like you said, Bella, here's this story. You share a story. You could ask the question, now, is that an outlier or is that representative of the body of data? You could stop there, go on to your 3 points, and then reveal if it's representative or an outlier at the end. That will increase the listening.
Wow, I love that. That's really cool.
Yeah,
So
it's about understanding how the brain works and the neuroscience of communication. It can help you communicate in a way that people will much more be listening. Yeah, and I do want to share, like, because I opened the loop, but I didn't close it. For example, some listeners may be going, what did Deborah say about the 27x value of a story? So just to deliver on that promise, there's a book called Significant Objects. And it actually did a study because I was interested to know, well, I've got some stories about people creating a lot of wealth with having a good story. Is that an outlier or is that representative? So this is one of those examples of trying to answer that question scientifically. So they took 100 distinct objects and put them on eBay, and they had 100 different writers add significance to the object. So adding significance is not the same as adding hype. So, for example, they would say, here are a pair of pot mitts. I remember my grandmother using these pot mitts and making me chocolate chip cookies when I came home from school. And that's such a sweet memory. Okay, so that adds significance to those pot mitts, but it doesn't actually tell me that the pot mitts are going to work any better if I buy them.
Right.
So that would be an example of adding significance. And the result was that the objects, and then they told at the bottom, this is what we're doing. They were transparent about it. The objects with a story sold for 2,700% more, or 27 times more than the
Wow.
exact same objects without a story. So I challenge you, if you're not bothering to come up with stories, you may be leaving a significant amount of money or manpower or enthusiasm or commitment on the table. So don't do that. Take the time to think about what you want to say and come up with those three steps where the for the croc brain, the midbrain, and the cerebral cortex, and then practice. Like Steve Jobs, who was running Apple computers at the time, practiced 3 weeks his Apple launches, what to say, where to stand, his pacing. If somebody busy running such a huge company thinks it's worthwhile to devote 3 weeks to one message, perhaps there's something in that for us to emulate, because certainly Apple's launches were a key to their success.
Right, and particularly when you think about some of those initial launches where people really had no idea what he was coming out with, it's going to be it must be cool because it's coming from Apple, but what the heck is it? We've never seen this thing before. So
Exactly.
to have that that really it just add that significance
Yeah.
to to the first iPhone or even the iPod or whatever those things that were quite in their time, very innovative.
Exactly. Steve Jobs, one of the stories that I tell in the book, Turn Words into Wealth, because one of the things I wanted to do is give people some examples and then a recipe so how they could communicate using neuroscience. So I walk through what I call a million-dollar message. So a million-dollar message would be like Steve Jobs, 1,000 songs in your pocket, or like Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week, or Brené Brown, Power and Vulnerability. It's that short, concise, snappy message, or like Seth Godin, Purple Cow, like, what's a purple cow?
It's intriguing, right? You got
Intriguing,
to
right?
know.
Exactly. So in Turn Words into Wealth, I walk you through how you can create a million-dollar message or several million-dollar messages, those short, pithy, to the point things that appeal to the croc brain, and then how to actually use the social brain and the midbrain and attract to that, and then the final step. So, and I give examples of how both myself, my clients, but also super famous people like Steve Jobs or Hillary Clinton or these kinds of people have made millions or billions from having the right message and following it through these steps, and then give people seven different recipes that they may be able to use themselves to generate seven figures if they've got a small business, but to take it up a notch. And I have had that experience with my clients as they learn how to craft their message more effectively. And then they get on podcasts or radio or TV, or they're speaking at the front of the room, or they're speaking on TED Talks. Many of them have reported dramatic increases in their business. For example, a dentistry practice went from 1.5 million to 5 million, or 5.6 million in a year or a year and a half, just by writing a book and getting clear on the message. And then they became paid public speakers and became, famous in their little corner of expertise. So it is worth doing. And the book can certainly help you. You don't need to talk to me, but I've helped a number of clients with startups go from having raised nothing to raise eight figures. And it's, again, if you're raising, whether you're looking for a client or you're looking for a new
An
superstar
investor,
or an investor, you need to have that message down and handy.
Wow, thank you. So, Aurora, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your fiction and writing for teenagers. And it just makes me think about, I mean, this is why we read fiction, because it almost always starts out with that question, that situation at the beginning of the book, and then we're hooked and we have to read the whole darn book to find out what happens at the end. Like, where did Gone Girl go?
I'm super excited about this trilogy called Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse. The first book is available on Amazon or wherever books are sold. The next two are coming out this year on Kickstarter first. So I'm looking forward to doing a Kickstarter launch. And I've always wanted to write a fantasy book or fantasy series ever since I was 9 years old. And I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. I was just like, I thought that was such a magical series. I remember touching the last book in that series as I lifted it down from the school library, and I was all filled with eager anticipation, but also anticipatory grief because, oh no, it's not the last book in this series. And, at 9 years old, C.S. Lewis impressed upon me that writers are really kind of wizards. Like, with just black dots of ink on white pieces of paper, we can transport somebody to another place in time that doesn't even exist. I thought that was amazing. So Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse is my attempt to pay that forward and perhaps inspire other 9-year-old or 11-year-olds or 65-year-olds, as the case may be. It's a fun adventure. It's kind of like Harry Potter meets Doctor Who. So it's two kids who go off on adventures in the multiverse. One is named Anna, and she's a wannabe actress from Los Angeles, and her younger brother, Zachary, is the exact opposite. While she's an optimist and kind of athletic and always thinks everything is going to go right, he's a pessimist, kind of an Eeyore character, imagines how things could go wrong. And he's also quite frail as he's recovering from cancer. Anyway, so they get on their uncle's magical parallel universe pod, a pup. And they go off on an adventure in the multiverse. And I've used the story. I think it's exciting and dramatic. BBC's actually expressed interest in adapting it for a TV series. But I'm also exploring some themes that really matter to me, such as free speech and the love and loyalty between siblings. So I think that it's a book that anybody can give with confidence, knowing that there's nothing in there that you're going to feel weird about having your teenager or tween read. It's not steamy, and it's not foul-mouthed. It's a fun, uplifting adventure.
What did you learn with writing fiction? Is this the first time you've written fiction? Had you written it before?
I started off writing fiction.
Did you?
I've always loved science fiction and fantasy. My first book, which I never published, was science fiction. And then I used to be in film and television. I was head of development for Canada's largest film and television production company, Atlantis Films. And then I worked as a vice president of production for a small company in Hollywood called Porchlight Entertainment, and I was responsible for their live action division. They were more into like family movies. And I got executive producer credit on Treehouse Hostage, which had a small theatrical release. I also wrote or co-wrote a movie called Eli's Lesson, which starred good old one-arm push-up Jack Palance. And I've won several awards as a screenwriter. So all of that was fiction. But then after running multiple businesses, my final business, the one I'm running right now, after I got my MBA in 2015 in Italy, is helping people, write, publish, and promote their books. So that is mostly nonfiction, or I thought it was going to be mostly nonfiction. But one of my clients is a senior lawyer of a law firm. His name's Michael Stockham. And our first book, or his first book, is called Confessions of an Accidental Lawyer, which was partly inspired by a true story. And it has been a smashing success. It's got over 50,000 readers, and it's got about 2,700 positive reviews on Amazon, which is a lot for
That's a
an
lot.
published first-time author. So he loved that process so much. We're writing nine more legal thrillers about a new hero called Jake Fox. The first one's coming out later this year. It's called Ties That Blind. Jake Fox, Ties That Blind. So, and I've actually helped a number of people with their children's books or their fantasy books. So I guess I'm doing both, but it's quite different writing fiction than nonfiction. For example, in nonfiction, you can change a data point, you can add a story, you don't have to change the rest of the book. But with a fiction book, if you change something with the character or change something on chapter three, every other chapter probably needs to be touched to make sure that, the person still has blue eyes, or the finger that they chopped off in chapter three is still chopped off in chapter 50, or whatever the case may be.
It's like doing continuity for a movie, right? But you have to, it's mental continuity.
Exactly right. So it's quite fun. So I hope if people are interested, and if they're on Kickstarter, I would love people to follow the launch of Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse on Kickstarter. It's free to follow. You can just then be announced when the book comes out. And what I love about Kickstarter is that I'm able to offer additional things that I couldn't just offer on Amazon or Noble or whatever. There's all kinds of opportunities. I've had the cover designer, which I think he did a great job. I've had him do full color art for each of the characters. So, these are the extra bonus things I can provide on Kickstarter that there's no way to really get bookmarks or special editions. Here's a bookmark to people normally. And so then Kickstarter is kind of a fun way to support innovation of books and other things. So follow Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse on Kickstarter if you're so inclined. I'd appreciate it.
And one of the things I love about science fiction, and I know you're this is something you're interested in, is how science fiction, I guess all fiction, but science fiction especially, has this impact of changing the world, right?
Yes.
And one of my favorite stories is about Mae Jemison, who was the first black female astronaut. And she got interested in space because she watched Star Trek and she saw Nichelle Nichols playing
Yeah.
Uhura. And she looked and she said, there's a black woman there doing something interesting in space. And that really, so Gene Roddenberry's ideals of having this multicultural spaceship resulted in something real. And I think that that is, people, a lot of people denigrate science fiction as, it's just for kids, it's just fantasy stuff, but it's extremely powerful.
It is. And I got chills as you shared that story. That's one of the things I'm really passionate about, that fiction can change reality. It can, because it precedes and it invites people to see things a different way, but in a gentle and fun way, or sometimes usually gentle, maybe not 1984, would maybe not be as or Brave New World. So the themes that matter to me that I'm exploring in Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse is censorship, because I think the cancel culture has gotten really carried away. And I'm a big proponent that free speech really matters, that people cannot think clearly unless they can speak their ideas and wrestle it out. And I'm worried that universities are losing that, I think, sacred responsibility to be a safe place for people to tug out different viewpoints and then discover the truth through a process, an alchemical process of talking it out. So instead of having like an evil queen, I've got an evil censor, somebody who does censorship, and word games are happening there. And the other thing, I used to have asthma as a child and was hospitalized several times because I couldn't breathe. So oxygen really matters to me. So the other One of the other themes in Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse is around taking care of the environment. And really, we take air for granted because it's
We
everywhere.
do, yeah, it's everywhere, yep.
But in this fantasy setting, I have one planet stealing the air from another planet. So I can dramatize the value of air, because if you don't have it, you know, you can survive for like 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, 3 minutes without air. Anyway, so dramatizing that. But then the evergreen, I think we also tend to forget about the love between siblings and the loyalty between siblings. You know, oftentimes there's romances or it's parents and child. Anyway, so I also am highlighting the loyalty between the siblings, which matters to me. I have two brothers and I love them. So anyway,
that's a great tribute to Lewis as well. And you think about,
exactly. Yeah. But hopefully people, if something is well written, it won't knock you over the head what the author is cares about. I won the Reader's Choice Award. It's won about maybe 10 book awards, including American Fiction Award, Best Preteen Book. So I think I've done a fine job, but you be the judge. Read it and let me
know. I have a 11-year-old granddaughter, so you see what she thinks. So.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Aurora, tell us again how people can find you.
Best way to find me is online. My publishing website is Same Page Publishing. And if you go to Same Page Publishing, you can see a bunch of different books that I've helped publish, and you can get a little flavor. And you can also, if you'd like, you can sign up and get a free, I call it a Thought Leader Launch Starter Library, which has got some books. And it's also got 5 videos, you know, 5 ways to attract capital clients and media coverage. Or my personal website is my name, aurorawinter.com. That's AuroraWinter.com. And I'm on LinkedIn under Aurora Winter if you want to say hi. If you're interested in getting help, you know, writing, creating, publishing, and promoting a book, you can go to AuroraWinter.com or SamePagePublishing.com, and there's a place there to sign up and apply for a free business breakthrough session. If that's something you would like to explore, I'd love to talk to you.
All right. Thank you. So Aurora, what is your one piece of advice for a young person starting out?
My one piece of passionate advice is don't answer the question that all the adults seem to ask you, which is, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because there's no one answer to that. I mean, I am old now, but I have had so many different chapters in my life, so many different books in this series, you know, so do whatever you're interested in and do it well. Whatever is worth doing, do it well, do it passionately. Be curious about it. See what you can find out about it. There are opportunities to do anything and everything, but you don't even know what the opportunities are until you dig into it. So don't think about one thing you're going to do for the rest of your life when you grow up. Let's never grow up. Instead, think about, what would you like to do first?
Oh, what wonderful advice. What would you like to do first? Yeah.
Life is long, don't you think, Bella? I mean, you've done many things.
Yes, that's true. It's true. Yes. And, most of the things I've done are not what I started out thinking I was going to do. So,
and because
opportunities come along, and you'll jump in, try things.
Jump in and try things, yeah. And I'm sure that your one piece of advice may change from day to day. What advice would you give today?
Oh wow, no one has ever asked me that, Aurora. My advice would be find beauty. No matter what you're doing, look for what's beautiful. There's going to be a beautiful person. There's going to be some beautiful words someone is going to say, some beautiful music to listen to. Always find the beauty in wherever you are. Because even the worst situation, there's something beautiful happening.
Truth is beauty. That's a good, that's good guidance. Yeah, I like that. Are you a gardener?
Aspirationally.
What's your favorite flower?
My favorite flower. Oh, that's really, I love lilacs. Oh. They have this, you know, just this very brief lifespan. The flower does, a week or so. So you really have to decide today is the day I'm going to go and look for the lilac bushes and smell the lilacs, because if you wait a week, they'll have faded. And they're full sensory experience. The colors, the different colors, the scent, the usually, it's a beautiful weather, usually where the lilacs are blooming. So
That reminds me of why I took my MBA in 2015. It was a friend asked me, if not now, when? And that's such a good question. And I use that again when in 2020 I decided to write my fantasy series. If not now, when?
yeah.
Like the flowers, there's a window of opportunity. And if you feel called toward it, don't put it off. Go for
Right.
it.
Yes. Jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jump for it. Well, Aurora Winter, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. And thank you so much for traveling with me to the edges of Lean.
Thanks for having me on the show, Bella. I really appreciate it.
This is Bella Engelbart, and I'd like to thank Aurora Winter for being my guest at the edges of Lean. What did you learn from this conversation? What ideas did it spark? We would love to hear from you. You can find Aurora Winter at aurorawinter.com. She's also on LinkedIn. Find me on LinkedIn or at leanforhumans.com, or comment wherever you watch or listen. Don't forget to subscribe and check out all my friends in the Lean Communicators community at leancommunicators.com, where you'll find lots of great new content every week. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbart with support from Podcast Inc. This is a Lean for Humans production.